Welcome to the General Assembly Thursday recap of the All Saints Podcast, a ministry of All Saints Presbyterian Church in Brentwood, Tennessee. This is Pastor Matt, and today I've got Mitchell Carter with me. Mitchell is the pastor at Trinity Pres in Murfreesboro, and kind of the recent pastor. Spent a couple months since you were installed over there at Trinity. So we're excited about that for you. I've also got Jason Halopoulos with me again, who once again is here under protest. And
how about that for an introduction? Listen.
Thankful to have Jason with us again. Jason again is with University Reformed Church in East Lansing, Michigan.
Because what time is it? What time is it here, Matt?
It's 9:35, so that doesn't really, you know.
No, it doesn't, but let's recall this morning. I was leaving the room. You don't even know because you were sound asleep and just continuing to sleep as I was leaving the room this morning.
Okay, but there's a big difference between that happening at 9:30 in the morning and that happening at 5:30 in the morning, and I think it was closer to 5:30 when you walked out.
Well, that's true. I'm just pointing out. It's been a full day
Some of us. Jason's going to be whining about this throughout the podcast. So we are going to recap Thursday of General Assembly, which is the last day. We actually finished business, I think, faster than... In my more than a decade, I don't know that we've ever been done this early on a Thursday.
Well, not only that, I'm just surprised. I think we all thought we'd be here till midnight.
Oh, yeah,
at least. Granted, we are on the podcast.
Yeah, that's right. there were a handful of things today. The big things today were we went through the overtures committee report. We're going to talk about overtures. Nominating committee was another thing. It doesn't take a lot of time, but it's a really important part of the business. I wanted to make mention of the fact that the only in a Presbyterian assembly would we have a vote, an electronic vote, to determine whether or not we would have an electronic vote.
That
was fantastic.
It really was.
And so we did do that today. But on nominating committee, this is where the assembly decides who's going to serve on our permanent committees and agencies for the coming year. And I'll just generalize for myself. I thought nominating committee outcomes were really good. I thought good men were placed on our committees and agencies this year, and so I was thankful for the work of the nominating committee and of the assembly in doing that. I don't know, was there anything about nominating committee that you specifically wanted to pull out?
No, I thought it was smooth this year, and it moved quickly on the floor, as it always does, but was really encouraged just by the nominees this year.
Yeah, me as well. And also want to say congratulations to Jason Pyland. We mentioned him specifically because so many of you in Nashville know Jason. He was elected to serve on the Committee on Constitutional Business, and I didn't look it up. Is that a three-year term?
I think so.
Yeah, three-year term. So that's an important committee. It turned out to be an important committee this year.
Surprising for a young man. I mean, that's a committee that usually takes a little bit of experience because you got to know the Book of Church Order.
Right. Yeah, it's that lawyer background that Jason has that makes him so fit for it.
Yeah.
Jason also addressed the assembly today, or it was yesterday. He's jumped in with both feet. Very proud of Jason. Also, the administrative committee gave their report today. Not a lot to report on there, except that it's under the administrative committee's report that we elect the stated clerk for our denomination. That happens every year. And this year we reelected Brian Chappell to serve for another year. That's ordinarily essentially a pro forma kind of thing. There was more opposition today than we've come to expect in that process. But it was not close by any means. It was a very clear election for Brian. So he'll be the stated clerk for the coming year, and of course we'll be praying for him as he performs his duties. So the only other business for today that we're going to talk about is the Overtures Committee, and I thought we would start with Overture 29. Before we jump in, I'm going to, on the show notes for this episode, I'm going to post a list of all of the overtures and what the assembly did on those. So if you're listening and there was a particular overture you were curious about, you can go and look at the outcome, what we did there. If you have questions about that, of course, Nathan and I are happy to answer your questions. You can email us or grab us on Sunday and We're happy to tell you about that. And I should have said at the top of the show that that not this Sunday, but next Sunday coming up, I'm going to do my usual General Assembly recap, where in Sunday school I'm going to talk through all of the most important business that was conducted this year at General Assembly. So you'll have an opportunity there to ask questions as well. We're not going to cover all the overtures tonight. I haven't counted all of them, but there's probably 30-some-odd overtures that we dealt with today. So a lot of them get down in the weeds. Let's start with 29. Would one of you summarize for us basically what was going on with Overture 29?
Yeah, I'd be happy to.
Thanks, Mitchell.
So if you all remember from last year, there were two overtures dealing with issues of human sexuality, and there was a study committee that gave a report, two overtures that kind of became topics of conversation, and those passed at the assembly and then went back to the presbyteries and didn't pass there. And so this was another attempt at one of those. It's going to change the Book of Church Order about who is qualified to be an officer, so teaching elder, ruling elder, and deacon. And so it put language, it added language in that specified some things about the character that is required for all three of those offices. And so this is come up because of some of the human sexuality issues, but it passed overwhelmingly with the Overtures Committee and then also passed overwhelmingly in the Assembly. The vote was 1,922 to 200, so overwhelming support of that. I don't know if you want to read it or you said you'd link it, but...
Yeah, I don't think we'll read it. But some of the key things there are that we avoided the language of specific sins. It was much more principle oriented than it was specific sins. And so, in a sense, there were some of the folks on the floor today that said that Overture 29 doesn't help us as a denomination get at questions of of sexuality. Particularly with respect to the ordained office, but it does. The lack of particular words or particular sins being named in Overture 29 doesn't keep us from being able to get to those things. It captures them by talking about the character and the understanding of the candidate with respect to not only sanctification in general, but their own sanctification. And so, So I think helpful. Any other thoughts on 29 before we go on? 29 is one of a whole handful of overtures that were sent up this year to try and get at the issue. And those overtures, the way we answered those overtures was by answering them by reference to Overture 29. So in other words, if you want to know what we did with Overture 12, we answered it the same way we answered Overture 29. So... essentially, what we did is we addressed what they were trying to get at in Overture 12 by the action in 29. So you read 29, you'll see what we did. We did that. There were six other overtures, 12, 20, 23, 33, 34, and 35. And again, I'll list these in the show notes so you can look at them more carefully. I think other than 29, the only other ones I want to talk about are the four that had minority reports. Are there any others besides the minority reports that you guys want to discuss?
No, those are obviously the key ones and the dividing points in the within the assembly and spark some good debate. So,
one other that didn't have a minority report that I will mention briefly is there was an overture sent up asking the assembly to declare CRT flawed, critical race theory, to declare it flawed, and the assembly. Elected to take the step of postponing indefinitely. This is a procedural motion that kills it kills the overture by refusing to answer it. Essentially, we didn't say yes, we didn't say no, and that's because either answer would have been problematic. And so, We put that away by postponing indefinitely. Let's talk about, we'll just take these in numerical order. Overture 8 was the first one that had a minority report. And quickly to explain what a minority report is when the Overtures Committee met, they debated, they perfected, and in the end, they voted. And the majority of the committee, in this case, 104 members versus 32 members, 104 members said that they wanted to affirm Overture 8 with an amendment. 32 disagreed. That group of 32, some portion of them, wrote a minority opinion. That minority opinion, when all of this comes to the floor of the assembly, you're allowed to move that minority opinion as a substitute. And so the minority opinion on 8 was to refer it back to the Overtures Committee, I believe, was the referral, right?
Yes.
Which would have had the effect of handing it to next year's Overtures Committee to try and continue perfecting it. So you end up with a debate on the floor between the Overture Committee's recommendation that we affirm it as it's amended and the minority opinion saying, no, we should send it back to the Overtures Committee. So in the end, it was affirmed. The Overture Committee's recommendation was affirmed. The vote was 1,245 to 521. We consider that a pretty lopsided vote here at the Assembly, a very strong affirmation. But I think, Jason, you wanted to speak to this one in a little bit more detail.
Well, this to me, I mean, even coming in this week, this to me was one of the overtures I had the most heartburn over and felt like was going to be one of the most important things that we did this week. And not necessarily because it's the most acute, but because of what I see as the future of what is needed for our denomination just to stay healthy and to be able to address things as it needs to. So what Overture 8 did, and as we pass it here, it's an attempt to amend the Book of Church Order, and then it would also, so therefore it would have to pass this assembly, which it did, and then it would have to pass two-thirds of our presbyteries approving it, and then it would have to come back and be approved by next year's General Assembly. But what it's doing is it's establishing a threshold for how the denomination can address issues of theological error or issues of ethical problems with a pastor or a church or within a presbytery that really hasn't taken the appropriate action with this theological error within its bounds or this ethical issue within its bounds. And to me, this is crucial because I think what's fascinating about PCA, we all agree that we need to maintain these three marks of the church, the word preach, the right administration of sacraments, church discipline. But what's fascinating is I think right now, one of the things that we've noticed over the last number of years with different theological errors is that it's been hard to get the discipline piece working when there's a presbytery that disagrees with the rest of the denomination regarding something. And there's just not a way to get in and help sort through that for the peace and purity of the entire denomination. So what this overture did was say, well, we will allow 10%, set a threshold, so 10% of presbyteries in the denomination, if 10% of the presbyteries in the denomination petition the General Assembly and ask the Assembly to take up this issue that's happening in whatever presbytery or on a local level, if 10% of the churches in a presbytery make that request to their presbytery regarding a particular church in their bounds, then at the local level, the presbytery will take it up. At General Assembly level, if it's a presbytery issue, then the General Assembly will take it up, where the original jurisdiction, so the actual trying of that thing, moves to that higher court. And it's an incredible safeguard just to help us to have a better functioning system of church discipline within our denomination. And I think we'll actually help to preserve the peace of our denomination and also the purity of it in the long run. So I'm very excited to see this pass this General Assembly.
Yeah, so right now, if a minister is accused of something, the Book of Church Order, the way it reads, is that if the presbytery refuses to act or fails to act,
mm-hmm.
And if two presbyteries in the denomination petition the assembly to assume original jurisdiction, they can move the trying of that case from the presbytery to the assembly. The presbytery won't do what it's supposed to, so the assembly now will take over. And so what Overture 8 did is it changed that language from refuses to act or fails to act. It changed the language to does not indict.
Correct.
So in other words, let's say a presbytery receives an accusation against a pastor and they investigate it and they refuse to bring charges against the minister. At this point, if 10% of the presbyteries in the PCA petition the assembly to assume original jurisdiction, then the assembly would move the trying of that case from the presbytery to the assembly. We have 88 presbyteries, I believe, right now. And so that means 9 presbyteries would have to petition. So what they've done is, in one sense, they've lowered the bar for the threshold in terms of what a presbytery has to do wrong in order for original jurisdiction to get moved, but they've raised the threshold in terms of how many presbyteries it takes to actually get it moved.
I'd say not only have they lowered the bar in one sense, but they've clarified the bar. So one of our problems is the failed act. Everybody isn't quite sure how to interpret that. So we have different entities that have interpreted that in different ways. And so functionally what it's done is it's stopped our higher courts from being able to actually go in and try the case and assume original jurisdiction. So it's been a constant debate for us. And it's just been a weak point in our polity.
That's right.
So now it's very clear if this passes our presbyteries, 2/3 of them, and this passed by next year's General Assembly, it will make it very clear and hopefully help mitigate this kind of quagmire that we often find ourselves in.
Yeah. And that really that's the key, is that the current language is not clear. How do you, when the assembly is asked to assume original jurisdiction and they turn around and they ask the presbytery or ask of the situation, they have to make a decision. Has the presbytery failed to act? Well, there's no definition for failed to act. And so it's very difficult to say they didn't. So yeah, this is much better.
So let me just briefly, this is why it hits so close home for me, is that I serve a church that was in a different denomination and was in that denomination for 50 years and eventually left that denomination to come into the PCA. I've always been in the PCA, but was laboring out of bounds there for a number of years. And while I was the early years I was at this church, we let it out of this former denomination into the PCA. And one of the main reasons was because they had this problem in their denomination. They had what was a classes system, so just like our presbytery system, but there were different classes where there were men that were ordaining lesbian women to be pastors, and they were solemnizing gay marriage, and there was no way for an outside classes to bring charges against that classes. As long as they were bound together within their bounds, there was no way to get in. And so church discipline functionally ceased to exist on a denominational level. So this is why I had heartburn wanting to see this pass this General Assembly, want to see this pass our presbyteries and next year's General Assembly, because I think it just helps. Not a fail-safe, but it just helps to safeguard us for the long run a little better.
That's right. And Jason's mentioned it quickly a couple of times, but we passed it here this year, this week. But now it has to be ratified by the presbyteries. It requires 2/3 of the presbyteries to affirm it. And then we come back and we vote on it again next year at the assembly. And if it is approved through all of those steps, it becomes a part of our Constitution. It amends our Book of Church Order to describe the new procedure. So, so a good first step. We're glad that 8 mm-hmm. passed. The next one I want to talk about is 15, Overture 15. Overture 15 was an attempt to put explicit language in our Book of Church Order that keeps a person who self-describes. What was the language he used? It wasn't self-describe, was it?
Describe themselves.
Yeah, describe themselves.
Yeah, who describe themselves as homosexual from being ordained. And so I've asked Mitchell to pull the actual language up. This is the language that Overture 15 wants to add to the Book of Church Order. Mm-hmm.
So it adds it to Chapter 7 of the Book of Church Order, and it makes a whole new paragraph, which would be the fourth paragraph. It says, men who describe themselves as homosexual, even those who describe themselves as homosexual and claim to practice celibacy by refraining from homosexual conduct, are disqualified from holding office in the Presbyterian Church in America.
Yeah, so very simple statement. I would say there were at least three different opinions about Overture 15 this week. Mm-hmm. The Overture's committee, what they recommended to the assembly was that we answer 15 by reference to 29. In other words, the language you just heard would not be added to the Book of Church Order. But the Overture's committee believed the concerns of those who sent Overture 15 up are answered by the action that we took in Overture 29, which you'll remember we talked about earlier in the show here. And it changed the language of some of the requirements with respect to ordination and character. And so there was a minority report on this one, and the minority report asked the assembly not to refer to 29, answer by reference to 29, but instead to approve the overture as amended. And the version you heard read just a second ago is the last and amended version. And so there was a group that very much did not want Overture 15 passed at all. They didn't want to see that happen. There was a group that, I'll say there were two different reasons people wanted Overture 15 to fail. And then there was the group that wanted Overture 15 to succeed. And so there are a lot of reasons why passing Overture 15 may not have been the wisest thing for us to do. It may seem very straightforward as you look at it. And if you, we'll talk about this in Sunday school in a couple weeks, it may seem like it may be disturbing to you and confusing that there was any debate at all about adding that to our Book of Church Order. Shouldn't we all agree that that statement is true? Absolutely, the statement's true. We all agree with it. But there were good reasons not to support it. Nonetheless, the minority position, the minority report, succeeded in overturning the Overtures Committee's recommendation. And so we, as an assembly, we did affirm the overture. And now the presbyteries this year will be given the opportunity to ratify that, to affirm it as well. 2/3 of the presbyteries need to affirm it in order for it to come back to us next year at the assembly for a final vote. And that would change the language in BCO Chapter 7 by adding that fourth paragraph. And so I don't know that we're going to talk about that one much more. It was a closer vote. That was 1,167. To 978, so divided by less than 100 points there, no, less than 200 points there, 200 votes in the assembly. So that one was pretty hotly contested, and we'll unpack that in more detail in Sunday school in a couple of weeks. That brings us to Overture 26. This was a statement on political violence. I think it's safe to say that at least in large part, this overture was motivated by the events of January 6th, but also the larger cultural context. You've all noticed that both the extreme left and the extreme right have been more willing to engage in violence to accomplish their political ends. And this overture came up to us asking us to make a statement to the church on political violence. Again, this is one that on its face, you think, why would that be controversial? Of course we should condemn, what happened on January 6th. Of course we should condemn, what has happened in the riots over the last few years. But there are reasons to be very hesitant to make such a statement formally as a denomination. It ruled out all violence without qualification. And just historically speaking, we would, for example, suggest that that would have ruled out the American Revolution. And maybe we should rule out the American Revolution. That may be an open question, but it was called the Presbyterian Revolt. And so, anyways, it's the point is it's a very complicated thing. And the statement, for me personally, it wasn't nuanced enough. I think it needed a great deal more nuance to it. Look, I personally very much condemn what happened on January 6th. Honestly, personally speaking, what happened on January 6th makes me very angry. I think we have to be careful as the church making these kinds of statements. There is nonetheless a place for us to speak on condemning this kind of violence. And I plan to speak to that in Sunday school. We're going to talk about that when we cover the assembly, and maybe in a Sunday school series coming up here pretty soon as well. Nonetheless, it failed. We did not make that statement. There was a minority report asking us to make it, and we did not pass that. So that was about 1,100 to 370 was roughly the vote there, saying we're not going to make that statement. And then that brings us to the last overture with a minority report, which was Overture 42, forbidding participation in political groups. Now, that title is a bit misleading. It's referring to political groups within the denomination. And so the Overtures Committee said, I've got to look here. Overtures Committee said we should answer this in the negative. Let's not make any statement on forbidding political groups within the denomination. There was a minority report that amended and perfected this statement and then asked us to affirm it. But the minority report failed. So we will not be making any kind of statement to that effect. Basically, there has been in the history of the PCA and in the denomination from which we were established in 1973, there's a history of groups gathering in order to accomplish political ends. They work in different ways. Historically, they have worked in different ways. But to the degree that they've been secretive and attempted to influence the church, there are at times questions about the appropriateness of the methods they're using. And this was trying to get at that. But it's another example of one that I think was perhaps not entirely well-formed. What did you guys think about 42?
You know, I think it was a statement because of different things that have happened in our denomination over its history. And really, I think we're all living in, and we all recognize, especially in the midst of COVID, in the midst of political season we've been in, that things just very quickly get polarized and people jump to extremes. And sometimes we're not operating the best in the political realm. And that's also true in the church realm. And so I think the desire was to say something to that by the church that sent this up, because it wasn't actually sent by a presbytery. This was actually sent by a local church in Chicago that sent this up to the General Assembly. And I think it was good to at least put it on the radar of the Assembly, and let's just put this out in the open and just say, oh, let's remind one another that we're brothers, that the politics of the world has no place in the church. Oh, of course, we're going to have different affinity groups. You're going to have that in your local church. You're going to have that in your presbytery. You're going to have that in General Assembly. That's natural. That's right. You're going to have conversations. But let's just remind one another that we're brothers, and that the way we operate within the church is to look different from the way that we would see political parties operate in the world. And so I think it was a good reminder for us, at least to discuss that at a General Assembly level. And have an open conversation about it.
Yeah. Mitchell, any thoughts?
Yeah, I agree. I think Jason's right that there's an increasing, it was said in several different contexts at the assembly this year, there is always the danger that the church is going to conform to the world. And so what this kind of acknowledged is that danger lies before us in this way too. The world, or at least America, is very politicized, very polarized, very our group against your group. And so at its best, I don't think that it I don't think that the statement would have, if it passed, enacted something or made something law or anything like that. But at its best, as Jason said, it reminded us of what Scripture teaches us, and particularly as Presbyterians, we're a connectional church. We're a church that my church actually cares what's going on at your church and at Jason's church, and so it acknowledges we're working together. We're not working against one another. And so I think at its best, that was what it reminded us of.
So I think that's good. You know, both of these overtures, the one that you just spoke to previously to this, Matt, this one, we had a number of others too. They're all kind of revolving around different things that are happening societally, aren't they? And so I think it's a good reminder for us in the church to remind ourselves, remind one another, that we're not to be shaped by society. No, our calling is to shape society. It goes the other way. And so in these different number of overtures that we've discussed here this evening, and a number that came before our General Assembly, some of them are the sinful influence of society upon the church, something like this. We're talking about political groups. Don't act politically in the church like the world acts politically. But there's also then the societal influence upon the church, where because this has happened in society, well, now the church has to react to that and speak to that. And I think that's also something that this General Assembly had to wade through. When is it that we're actually supposed to speak to these things that are going on societally? Because, look, we're not to be shaped by the society. So the church isn't always to answer everything that's going on in society. We're the ones that are to be shaping society. And so there are times that we are to speak to societal things because we are to shape society. So that's part of the wrestling that was happening this week with these different things.
Yeah, you know, the other thing that ran through my head a lot this week, because we heard the refrain, we have to speak to this, we have to speak to this, mm-hmm. so much this week. I found myself thinking, yes, but do we have to speak this way? Do we always have to speak constitutionally? A lot of times, yeah. We have to speak to this was being said in reference to some amendment to the Book of Church Order. So, you know, Overture 15, where we're going to add a paragraph that that talks about a person who describes themselves as a homosexual. You know, the statement was, we have to speak to this. And I found myself thinking, do we have to speak to it by adding this paragraph to the Book of Church Order? Are there other ways to speak to it? One of the speakers, I thought, made a good point. The Confession speaks to this already. The Book of Church Order speaks to this already in different places, in different ways. We published a human sexuality report last year that speaks to where we stand on this. I mean, we are speaking to this. There's no question we have and are speaking to it. But there seemed to be a sense on the part of some of those giving speeches that if we haven't spoken constitutionally, we haven't spoken.
Yeah.
And I think that's a fallacy. So,
well, I think sometimes there's this equation that's set up that if A happens, then you have to speak to A, or otherwise you don't care. You show you don't care.
Yeah.
And this isn't always the formula. Just because A happens doesn't mean that you have to do this in response to A, or you show a lack of concern. And we get in trouble in this in our own families, we do in the church, we do in the broader church and the denomination, where we get passionate about a thing. And so we think this needs to be done in response to this thing, or people don't really care. Well, not necessarily. And this is one of the reasons I love Presbyterianism. We're getting all of these men together that have been ordained and called by God to this office, men that are filled with the Holy Spirit, and they're all bringing their wisdom to bear, frankly, on things that are very hard to determine and are matters of wisdom. And then we trust the Spirit to work in the midst of that, and you know what? A happened, and so we should do this in response to A, and that does show there's care and concern. You know what? A happened. Maybe we shouldn't do this, but that doesn't mean that we don't care. And the wisdom of the room usually wins out, and
yeah.
I'm encouraged as I walk away.
Yeah. Well, that leads us to the last question I want to ask before we wrap up, and that is just to reflect on the week. This is none of us was here for our first General Assembly this year. We've all been to multiple General Assemblies.
I have roomed with you a lot of years, man.
The joy,
yes,
that I can hear in your voice when you say that.
It's
just the fond memories. I mean, you kind of sounded like you were drifting off in revelry there for a second.
I was.
When you talked about it.
Yeah, excitement. Yes. Actually, what it does is I find myself praying more for Leslie every time after a General Assembly week. She comes to mind a lot more.
Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah. Yeah. She is a patient woman. Godly and patient.
She is.
Well,
it truly is.
So what did you guys think? How are you going home? You know, every year we go home from the assembly and you're either, you know, euphoric. You just feel like we just knocked it out of the park. What a great week. What good work. And sometimes you go home and you think, I'm so discouraged about our denomination. And sometimes it's mixed emotions. How are you guys going home after this week?
I think that, so this is my fourth assembly. I've been at all the ones that I've been ordained for, which is not that many, and COVID cut one out. So you can do the math. And I think one of the things, I did not grow up Presbyterian. I grew up in a restorationist movement church, which is like the Churches of Christ and things like that, which in some ways is the opposite of Presbyterianism. Mm-hmm. And I think there's a tendency in some of those other traditions to be waiting on mountaintop experiences, kind of aha moments, everything just fit together. And one of the things I love about Reformed theology and about Presbyterian churches is there's a lot more. I mean, we talk about the ordinary means of grace. There's kind of slow plodding God working in your life. And I felt that this way at the General Assembly, or I felt that way this year at the General Assembly. I sat in and watched overtures and watched Jason work with understanding of the BCO and talking about the rules of assembly operations and things like that. And I understand those things a little bit better this year. I understand what it means to be confessional a little bit better and how that kind of doesn't just guide the way that we interpret scripture, but even how we respond to the perceived urgency of cultural moments. So I felt that way. And it is always good to see brothers who I get to see frequently, like you, Matt, and infrequently, like you, Jason, and guys I went to seminary with, and hear how they're doing and how God is working in their ministry and in their lives and in their families. And so it was an encouraging year and kind of I learned a little bit more. I feel more prepared to minister well in Christ Church.
Mm. Yeah. Great.
You know, my staff and elders and my wife, they all make fun of me because I love it. I love General Assembly Week. I was with a whole bunch of people this evening that are people that have matriculated from University Reformed Church and gone on to serve other churches, fellows, interns, etc. And we were gathered in a room, and I said, you know, it's General Assembly Week. It's like going to Walt Disney World. I mean, it is. It is. I love it. You know, I remember the very first year I went, and what I was immediately shocked by was all of these men gathered in a room and listening to them orderly debate one another, and the respect and the kindness that they could disagree with one another. And still, I don't know, what we say we've been doing this close 20 years now.
Yeah.
I still walk away every year encouraged by that. Amazing. Now, there are tense moments here and there, but listen, there's going to be. That's fine. But on the whole, and almost completely, there's just a general demeanor of, you know what? Let's hash this out. Play the man. Let's have the debate. Let's talk things through. Let's pray through it together. Let's hear substance. And then let's vote, and then we walk out together and we serve together. And I love that.
Yeah,
I love to see that. And we saw a lot of that this week. You know, on the Overtures Committee that Mitchell referencing, there was a lot of just working to compromise with one another. And this is one of the things I love about Presbyterianism. It forces you to compromise. You can't just stand in your corner and say, it's my way or the highway. No, because there's men that, you know what, within bounds, we have bounds because of our confession, that you have to come alongside of and say, okay, within these bounds now, we have to agree about how to approach this or approach that. And I love that. That's the give and take that requires us to be sanctified more and more. And it's good for me. It's good for my heart. It's good for my spiritual life. And I always walk away blessed. The other, I have one more.
Yeah, sure.
The other thing I love, and why it's kind of like Walt Disney World too, is not just because of the rides of fun like that through Overtures Committee, but it is also, it's just seeing, being with friends.
Yeah.
And for me, it's like reunion week. There is a reason that Matt and I've roomed together all these years, and it's because I get to be with my friend.
Yeah.
And it's a blessing. The one year we didn't, because Virginia Beach, we both
brought families.
We brought our families. It's Virginia Beach. So, but I think almost every other year we've done it, and it's good for my soul to be with Matt Bradley. It's good for my soul to be with Mitchell. It's good for my soul to be with all of these men that I only get to see a couple times a year and are praying for me and praying for them, and talk theology and to laugh and to joke around, and it's good for me.
Ironically, I think the least Disney World-like year was the year we met at Disney World.
That is not an overstatement. That is so true. I hadn't even thought about that. That was a horrible
Orlando.
GA.
That was 2009, I think. Or was it?
I don't have a clue. I can't keep 10.
It was the year before Nashville or the year after Nashville.
I don't know.
Nashville was 10.
Yeah, Nashville was 10. So it was either 2009 or 11. But
it was. Yeah, it was not a good venue for us.
No, it was not.
No,
it wasn't. And you were sick that year.
I was sick that
year. So you roomed by yourself and didn't. Do any social time with any of us, hardly.
I really didn't, no.
You just kept going back to your room to crash.
Yeah, that's true.
Okay, well, I share you guys' thoughts and sense of the week. I'm encouraged by the work this week.
Yeah.
There's very little that I think I'm discouraged by. I think the work that the assembly did was good work. It's created some work for us to do this coming year. And we'll see how that works out. I'm hopeful for some of that. But yeah, definitely enjoyed the time together and time together with friends. So, okay, well, that's General Assembly. Another one in the books. Again, we'll revisit in Sunday school in a couple of weeks, but that'll be it for the podcast. We'll go back to our regular weekly podcasts now on Y'all Saints. And so I want to thank our guests, Mitchell and Jason, for being with us again late into the night. It's 10:20.
Very late.
And I shouldn't have even said the time,
because
now Jason's definitely going to turn into a pumpkin. And so he didn't even know what time it was. He was fine. But now all of a sudden he's...
goodness, it's late.
Yeah.
Oh,
so.
All right.
Now, hold on a second. Oh, before we wrap up, Jack Watkins is walking down the hallway towards
celebrity.
Us here. This is Y'all Saints. Yeah.
Say something, Jack.
Yeah. Welcome, Jack Watkins. We were just wrapping up the episode here.
I'm glad to be leaving.
Yeah, I'll bet you are. Thank you for your leadership on the Administrative Committee COC this year.
Oh, it was awesome.
That was
a real privilege and honor, and just a lot of fun.
Yeah, it was always fun to see you this week up in front of the assembly giving your report. How many times did you report? 10? 15?
It felt like it, but it was only four.
Well, thank you so much. Appreciate it, Jack.
Yeah.
Okay, well, we're gonna wrap up, and that's it for General Assembly 2022, and next week we'll be back with a regular show. So thanks again to our guests. I appreciate you guys being with us, and thanks to our listeners for following along as well. Y'all Saints is a podcast of and for All Saints Presbyterian Church, Brentwood, Tennessee. We hope you'll join us again next week for our next episode. And if you haven't already, please subscribe to get episodes delivered into your podcast app as they're published. Thanks again. Grace and peace, Y'all Saints.